As a child, Otha Ellis Bates McDaniel taught himself to play guitar, but he never found one he liked, so he built his own. Soon after, his rectangular-shaped axe with an old TV dial for a volume knob could be heard on radios everywhere as he launched the beat heard round the world. He was Bo Diddley. His handmade guitar is at the Hard Rock Cafe, Times Square. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history are at Hard Rock Cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
And now, Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
Mighty Manfred here, and today I'm chatting with His Majesty Kurt Baker, the Crown Prince of Power Pop. His Kurt Baker combo's got a new single out on Wicked Cool Records titled Can't Go Back. It's a former coolest song of the week, and let's give that a listen, and then I'll be back with Kurt on your coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Don't act so surprised. I've gone dreaming in some far place, a word to the wise. Time travel will get you erased. And I was flying, baby, to a world that's meant for me. Now I can't go back, I can't go back, I can't go back no more.
Mighty Manfred here for your coolest conversations, and it is check-in time with a prolific prince of power pop, Kurt Baker. He lends his name to the Kurt Baker Combo, and they are responsible for a brand new single that is also this week's coolest song in the world, Can't Go Back. How are you, Kurt?
Hey, I'm doing pretty well. It's good to be back here.
Man, where are you today, Kurt Baker? Where are you?
I'm in Madrid. I just got back from Madrid. I was out of Madrid on tour for a little bit, but just a couple days, just got back. So I'm just hanging out.
Well, man, you must be suffering from some massive jet lag, right? Because you were just in Japan.
That's right. Yeah. So we just got back from a tour of Japan. We got back on Friday. So unfortunately, we missed Halloween, but that's okay because it was like, you know, we flew on like Friday morning, the 31st or whatever, or the Thursday was Halloween. Oh, I can't even keep track of days anymore. But it was like a 26, 28 hour flight back because we flew from Tokyo to Beijing to Frankfurt and then to Madrid, but with all the layovers, oh man, we didn't have a chance to dress up as zombies, but man, we were zombies.
Well, wait a minute though, because you did dress up, maybe not on Halloween Day, but you played this like 2-day Halloween ball there.
Yeah,
in Tokyo.
We did. We had a really great time at this. It was right in Shinjuku. It was our first time in Japan, completely brand new and out of sight. So cool. But we did get to play this really fun festival called the Halloween Ball, and there were a bunch of great bands on the bill. The night that we played, the Mummies were actually playing, so it was cool to see the Mummies. I'd listened to them for years, and to see them in action was quite something. But of course, you had a plethora of great Japanese rock and roll bands like the Fadeaways and Phantom Surfers. It was a great night, and everyone was dressed up in costumes. So that it was the weekend before. Mark, the guitar player that was with us on the tour, he was quite perturbed about it. He's like, I don't think that it's right that they're celebrating Halloween like this a week before. And I was like, oh, come on, Mark, just enjoy it. And so it was quite an adventure.
And so I think it's Seiji, who is Guitar Wolf. He curates that every year, is my understanding. Did you play with Guitar Wolf or see?
Well, they played the next night, and so okay. We had another show that night in Tokyo. So unfortunately, we missed Guitar Wolf. I would have loved to see Guitar Wolf, but one of the other bands that we discovered over there that were just phenomenal, and we played with them in Osaka. Well. we were touring with a band called the Neat Beats, who are really great too. They're kind of like the Japanese Beatles, you know, from the Cavern Club days, and that they are super nice guys. And so we're really grateful that they brought us over and we got to do shows with them. But in Osaka, we played with this band called the King Brothers. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
I am familiar with the King.
The fabulous King Brothers. Wow. Well, we had no idea what to expect. And when they did the sound check, you know, they're very polite, you know, very, very nice guys. They took us out to sashimi and sake before, and we had a great time hanging out with them. Well, we had no idea what was in store for us. It was the most wild, savage concert of that I've ever witnessed in my entire life. And the singer was just going nuts, and we kind of had our jaws on the floor. We're like, what is going on? And of course, we had to play after them, and we're like, you know, this is a power pop rock and roll band, you know, and they blew us out of the water. So it was, but really so fun to meet these new bands and travel and tour in a different country. And the fans and the friends there are just so wonderful. They were just giving us so many gifts of different candies and obscure 45 records. It's just a magical place.
It is 100%. And I want to add to this thing about the sound checks, these bands, and you mentioned how crazy and wild the King Brothers are. They absolutely are. It's like the bar is raised really high. I mean, these bands, they're going to put on a show. So you mentioned the Neat Beats. So, you know, they're looking like it's 1963 in the Cavern Club.
Absolutely.
They don't have the stage moves from that era. I mean, it's all done through their kind of perspective on things, but still everything is everybody is playing at the top of the game. And if somebody's going to set themselves on fire during a show at the sound check, they're going to be set themselves on fire just to make sure it's working.
Just to make sure it works, right?
Whereas, you know, certainly with American bands and most other bands I've ever come in contact with, the sound check is a very basic thing where nobody's putting 100% effort into sound check. They just want to make sure they can hear themselves in the monitor. Typically, they're not going to sing as hard as they are because they're scared that the sound guy isn't going to turn them up loud. So they're kind of putting as least amount of effort to get the monitors as high as they can. Whereas the Japanese bands, as I said, if they're going to set themselves on fire, they're going to do it at the sound check to make sure everything is exactly right.
Totally. I mean, a great example of that was one of the last shows that we played in Kyoto with the Neat Beats. We were playing at this really, really old music venue. It was just, you know, it was your traditional Japanese sake house back, you know, maybe 60, 70 years ago. And really nothing had changed except for it was now a music venue. And so you can just imagine, you know, and we got in there early for the sound check, and the Neat Beats were on stage playing, and it was like we had our own private show because they just were on fire, and they played a lot of songs that they would not play, you know, during their set. So it was really fun, and they just played so well, and they had all the moves down and everything, you know. And we got up on stage, and, okay, yeah, monitor works, okay, let's have a beer, guys, come on.
Well, you mentioned this was the first time in Japan. You were a world traveler, though. You played all over Europe. You played all over the U.S. Was there still any culture shock going to Japan?
Well,
was there anything
that
hit you as unexpectedly odd or different?
I was thinking about this because I was kind of bracing myself for such a huge culture shock. And actually, to be completely honest with you, and maybe it's just because I've been living in Madrid for the amount of time I have, it wasn't as you know, it wasn't as shocking. Of course, the language barrier is difficult, and there are some special, you know, certain small things that are different. But in general, like a city like Tokyo or these places that we're playing are very modern. They're very clean. Yeah. The people are very polite. You know, there's no trash on the street. You know, I know that one of the things, we're walking down the sidewalk and someone's, you can't be smoking cigarettes outside on the sidewalk. You know, so it's like they just really seem to have it down. You know, in Tokyo, it's a very efficient place. It's a very comfortable place considering how many people live there. It's the biggest city in the world now. And so, yeah, but I think, you know, Madrid is such a crazy place. And there is a lot in common with especially musically, between Japan and Spain for what they're into and what they like. It wasn't such a culture shock as it would be for me. I remember being very shocked culturally when I went to Morocco or when I was, yeah, you know, somewhere else, you know, but Japan is just very, forward thinking and it's a great place to be. I was even thinking, man, if I practice my Japanese, maybe I could live here someday. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, I have to say my favorite two audiences in the world are in Japan and Spain. I mean, both of them have got really great rock and roll cultures where the fans, they just know everything about the music in general. I mean, and they're very, very exuberant. I mean, from the first chord, they're shooting off like bottle rockets, singing along songs. Did you go to any record stores when you were there?
Oh, well, yeah, we did. We did get to a few different locations of Disc Union. So I found a few records that I'd been looking for, but also I was just so amazed by one of the Disc Union locations, which one of our friends works at. They have just there's this huge wall just filled with every single Beatles record imaginable, you know, Beatles records from Zimbabwe or Iceland, or, you know, they had everything. And it was just incredible to see so many Beatles records there. And some of them are really expensive. Yeah. But just to see that massive collection of Beatles records in one store, you could go and buy them all there. That was quite something. And I know that Disc Union also has, you know, they have their specialized shop. So for a music fan, it's like paradise, you know.
Very cool. Well, let's talk some about the new single last Friday. That was a released date for Can't Go Back. It's available from Wicked Cool Records. This is a 45. It's on, I'm going to call it, emerald green vinyl.
Yes, it's like an emerald green. Yeah, very. We didn't get it out in time for St. Patrick's Day. No, and I don't think any of us are actually Irish so well, but we like to. We hopefully can get some luck from this one, right? I don't know.
It's emerald green because it's a jewel of a record.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, jewel. Yeah.
Well, my notes tell me that the new single is produced like the last one by Mike Maraconda from the Ranch Hands, a New York City-based 80s garage rock band. He's been overseas for a long while. Did you record the new tunes at the same session as the last one?
That's correct, yeah. So we basically, when we went in to record the last single, we had four songs. So the idea was to record really two singles. So what you have here is the other two songs that we recorded from the same session, which we did almost a year ago now. That was back in December of 2018. And yeah, so we were working with Mike Maraconda there. And just like the previous single that we put out on Wicked Cool, this was mixed by Wyatt Funderburk in Nashville.
In Nashville. And I see in my notes that he also is credited with playing some guitar, contributes some backing vocals. And so those tracks or email back and forth, he wasn't in the studio when you recorded, right?
No, he wasn't. So, originally we had the first mix of the record actually was just the four of us in the combo and a few other guests that were on the record that were in Madrid. And then we went back and we were remixing a lot of stuff. So after the initial mixes, Wyatt went in and recorded stuff in Nashville with another Nashville-based musician on the Can't Go Back single. Is Jonathan Pushkar, who's a real nice guy too. So he loves his 12-string Rickenbackers, which he played on that track. So shout out to Jonathan. What's up, man?
Oh, cool. Well, I saw as well that Chris Rogers is contributing keyboards. Must have been the same thing with his tracks being just sent via the interwebs?
Yeah, we just kind of bounced around some files here and there. There were a lot of different versions of the mix for Can't Go Back. So what we have here is, you know, the final one. This one actually took a while to mix to kind of get it right because there was a lot of different ideas going in and out. originally we were kind of going for like a Wizard vibe, like a Roy Wood with a lot of saxophone. And now the saxophone is actually kind of a little more buried in the mix. Right. And it's got more of a 60s pop feel now, where we were originally kind of going for something maybe 70s glam. Yeah. But, you know, things change in the process. You know how it is.
Right. And of course, later on for the box set, you can whip out those alternate.
That might be kind of interesting. Yeah.
Well, backing vocals, who's this? Micah Makovsky.
Yeah, Micah Makovsky. So she actually was also singing on our last single earlier this year, I Can't Help Falling in Love. Oh. So she is a Madrid-based musician, and she does a lot of, right now she's actually working on a solo record. I think she recorded out in Arizona, out in the desert. So she's always all over the place, but she's a very talented musician and one of our good friends, and we really kind of had a great year playing with her side project band called The Manilas. Great rock and roll band. They put on a wonderful show, The Manilas. And so we asked her to come down to the studio and contribute some stuff, and it was a lot of fun. So she's on that too. She sings some backups at the end of the song.
But I thought so. Can't Go Back, credited to you and Andrew Rhymes.
Now, yeah,
former bandmate in The Leftovers. Tell us about Andrew.
That is right. Yeah. So occasionally, when I'm writing a tune and I just can't get the lyrics, you know, where I want them to be, I will I'll call up my old buddy Andrew Rice. And so, yeah, The Leftovers broke up a long time ago, and there was a big falling out between a lot of the guys in the band, blah, 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 blah. But Andrew has always been a really great friend of mine, and we started The Leftovers a long time ago. He has contributed lyrics for a few of my songs since then, so we try to keep in touch with that, and it's always good to work with him. And actually, it was really funny because in when we were in Japan, I was getting a lot of requests for Leftover songs. So I didn't realize that people over there knew about The Leftovers. But as you were saying, you know, they're really into the music there. So when we had some free moments during the set, I would kind of just play a few old Leftover songs. And at the end of the tour, I ended up doing an acoustic show where I played a bunch of Leftover songs, which people really enjoyed. So yeah, for Can't Go Back, it was great to have Andrew into the fold, helping out with the lyrics.
Oh, so he was helping out with the lyrics. I was going to ask on Can't Go Back, who came up with the bridge, but that was yourself.
Yeah. Well, myself and the Turtles. But, you know.
Well, you keep in good company. That's the important thing.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Well, when can we expect a new full length from the Kurt Baker combo?
Cool. Well, right now we are talking with Wicked Cool, and it looks like I will be heading to the States probably in February, and I'm going to be working with the guys that I used to play with back in the States. So I think we're going to change it up a little bit this time, because this past summer I was back at home in Portland, Maine, and Wyatt Funderburk was up, and we pretty much wrote a whole new record. So we're working on demos right now. Yeah. But we're going to go over I don't know exactly where we're going to record it yet, but the plans are being set right now to do a record with Wyatt and Chris Rogers. We can get Jeff Palmer from The Connection in, and a few other people, maybe some guys from the combo will also contribute tracks. Yeah, just trying something new again, maybe, you know, going back to where it all began with the first three records.
Oh, man, it sounds pretty exciting.
Yeah.
We still, though, need to talk about the flip to Can't Go Back.
Oh,
right. Talk about the B-side.
Side B.
No one's home. No one's home. No. Now, did you write that with anybody?
I did, yeah. So I did. So this one, I collaborated with my friend Mark O'Flaherty, who was on tour with us in Japan on guitar.
That was a guy that wasn't happy about Halloween not being celebrated.
Oh, well, yeah. He just was like, I can't believe it. But He had a good time anyway. So Mark is actually, he's from Canada, and he played in a band. He still occasionally does some touring with them, but they are a band that I really loved when I was a kid, and they're called Chicks Dig It.
Chicks Dig It, yeah.
Yeah, Chicks Dig It. So he's been living in Madrid for almost as long as I have, and we, you know, we always are playing around in some side projects around and jamming, and we usually, most of the time, we just go bowling. There's a bowling alley right by our neighborhood, so we go there quite a bit. But one of the days we were hanging out right before going bowling, I think we sat down and wrote this song together. So yeah, it was just kind of fun. I had this idea, and he also helped out with the lyrics and some of, you know, getting the vibe of the song. So it was a lot of fun collaborating with Mark.
Well, to me, it's got a you speak of vibe, it's got a rockabilly kind of sense to it. Describe it or not?
Oh, well, yeah, you know, I mean, I've always kind of secretly wanted to be kind of in a rockabilly band and try and sound like Gene Vincent or something like that. I love that old stuff, and I've never really had the chance to perform or even write in that kind of style. And I just had this idea one day, and I just went with it, and I'm really happy with the results of it, because, yeah, this is something that I've always wanted to try out, different kind of rock and roll style, and it's a lot of fun, and it's a lot of fun to sing, too. I was just kind of recently listening to the Paul McCartney album, Run, Devil, Run, and I think a lot of my early introduction to that, you know, 50s, late 50s rock and roll, rockabilly sound kind of came probably from the Beatles themselves. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, later on some of the solo stuff, because, you know, they were the best rock and roll teachers for me, the Beatles. So, you know, I kind of retraced the steps backwards to see what they were listening to and got into a whole mess of a bunch of artists from that, you know.
Very cool. Kurt, it's been great as always to chat with you.
Oh, yeah. It's always a pleasure.
Well, man, it is now B-side time. Here's a Kurt Baker combo with No One's Home in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Driving this shit from 9 to 5, mail truck, boogie just giving my drive. Must be one of those real bad days, cause I can't seem to get my pay. And now I'm getting no one's home. And now I'm getting no one's home.
With a rockabilly vibe going on, that was a Kurt Baker combo doing No One's Home here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. That track is a B-side to their latest single out on Wicked Cool Records. Now, this is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to the group's namesake for joining me on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Olivia Callahan for producing our podcast. Next time around, I look forward to speaking with Andy Chernoff, founding member of The Dictators and a songwriter and producer of note. And he's got a new single out, and we'll talk about that and catch up with him as well. That's your next Coolest Conversations, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
As a child, Otha Ellis Bates McDaniel taught himself to play guitar, but he never found one he liked, so he built his own. Soon after, his rectangular-shaped axe with an old TV dial for a volume knob could be heard on radios everywhere as he launched the beat heard round the world. He was Bo Diddley. His handmade guitar is at the Hard Rock Cafe in Times Square. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history are at Hard Rock Cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com. Don't let it slide, baby, diamond ring.